Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Pick Your Poison, Volume 2, Story 1. 2 years ago, I was hiking the western section of the Potawatomi Trail in Lower Michigan, and about 3 hours into the hike, I rounded a bend and came across a half-burnt, distressed antique doll hanging by her dress from a low tree branch. The eyes had been removed or burnt out. The second my eyes caught sight of it, I literally jumped and caught my breath. After composing myself and realizing it was ridiculous to be freaked out by an old doll that some kid probably hung on the branch to freak jumpy, superstitious people out just like me, I took it down and tossed it as hard as I could away from the trail into a bunch of dense brush. I went on my way. About 4.5 hours later, I was making my way back along the same corridor on my return trip. As I started up the hill that led to the spot where that tree and the doll were, I was again startled out of my walking rhythm and completely froze. Directly ahead of me, near the base of that tree, was the doll, sitting upright on the path, facing me. Completely spooked, I looked all around me for signs of people, even going so far as unsheathing a knife I carry. Once I was able to collect myself and ensure that I wasn't about to get jumped by a man or whatever else my mind was imagining was out there, I started towards the doll. There's no way that anyone would have seen the doll after I hurled it into the brush. It was a good 20 feet from the trail and the peak of summer, so the brush was at least knee high. Though I was freaked out, I picked up the doll again and rehung it by the tree on the low-hanging branch where I originally found it. Out of respect? Fear? I don't know. I do know I hightailed it out of there. And the next couple of times I've been back that way, there has been a doll hanging by the dress, slowly weathering and falling to pieces on that old tree. No one else moved her. Or, at least, everyone who did put her back, like I did. Story number 2. My girlfriend and I decided to go on a short day hike in the Rocky Mountains this past summer. We're new to Colorado, so just driving through the mountains is somewhat disorienting because we don't know our way around. This was going to be our first Colorado hike, by the way. Once we got to the trailhead parking lot, I immediately noticed that it was deserted, which I thought was a little odd for a weekend. As soon as we started up the trail, I was immediately on edge, as soon as we were several feet into the tree line. My girlfriend immediately noticed and was asking me what was bothering me. For a while, I just denied it. But eventually the feeling became intense enough for me to tell her that I think we should go. This kind of ticked her off because she was really looking forward to the hike. I tell her that I'm just not feeling quite right and I think we should leave. We bicker about it for a moment and she is persistent. She promises that when we get to the top of the ridge, we can turn around and leave. Before giving me a chance to reply, she turns around and starts walking up the trail. I just stood there for a moment and listened. The woods were dead silent with nothing audible but a quiet breeze through the trees. I was taken away with my bad feelings and just stood there in a trance, looking through the trees. The abrupt halt of my girlfriend's faint footstep snapped me out of it. I looked up at her and she was staring at me like she had just seen a ghost or something. I yelled up at her, asking what was wrong, to which she replied, "We need to leave." I jogged up to her, and right next to the trail was a very fresh mountain goat carcass that something had been eating on. The meat was so fresh that it didn't even smell, and there were no flies around. You could almost still feel the heat off the dead animal. Not that we stood around long enough to really notice. It was one of those situations where you just want to run out of there, but you know you shouldn't. We walked down the trail, silent, watching our backs the whole time. As we were leaving the park, a ranger met us at the gate and asked how we had gotten in. We replied that the gate was open when we arrived. He looked confused, almost like he didn't really believe us. He eventually informed us that the trail had been closed due to mountain lion activity. Story number 3. When I was a kid during summer break, my brother and I would have survival competitions. We would see who could live the longest time with the least equipment. When I was 15, I bet him I could go out with only the clothes on my back and whatever we had in our pockets at the time. He agreed. All we had between us was our normal clothes, work boots, and each had a pocket knife. Our grandfather dropped us off at different locations. I remember I had rabbit that night, Anyway, after 10 days, I had my camp all set. That evening, I heard someone call into my camp. I called back to come on in. Even at 15, I could take most grown men in a fight, as I was 5'9", 195 pounds, and well-trained. So I wasn't worried too much, but I kept an eye on him. Nonetheless, he was an older man, about 55 if I had to guess, and rather small. We talked for a bit, and I shared the fish I had mud-baked in the coals of my fire. We talked a bit more about nothing in particular, and he stood and told me he had to leave. Before he left, he said he had noticed that my water was running low, that it looked as if it were going to rain, and that if it did, the spring I had cleaned out might get fouled. I thanked him for his company and wished him luck. About an hour later, it was getting dark, and I decided to take his advice and get water. I just finished when the sky opened up, and it started raining like it was pouring out of a boot. On the way back to camp, I actually got a little confused about the direction. It was dark and raining like you wouldn't believe. Wind was howling like a banshee and lightning was popping all around, which isn't a good thing when you're in the woods. When I finally found my camp, I didn't recognize it. During the storm, a large oak had been blown over by the wind and took out most of it, including my little shelter. That night was the last night my brother and I spent in the woods during that summer. For years, I thought it was creepy that the old man had suggested that I get water. I would have most likely been in the shelter when the tree fell. Then I found out what creepy really was. Flash forward 11 years. When I was 26, my father died of a massive heart attack. Before I finish, I should explain something. My father married a second time after divorcing my mom. Why should I add that? Because his second wife wasn't much of a wife. When he died, she told my brother and I that we had to take care of the arrangements because if my father had any debts, it would be our responsibility. Anyway, she turned his funeral and estate over to us. She thought he was completely broke. We made the arrangements, and after the funeral, we were going through his belongings. My mother was there, as was my grandfather. We were thumbing through some family pictures when I actually saw the old man who had visited my camp when I was 15. I told my grandfather that that was the man who saved my life during the storm. No, can't be, son. I was puzzled. My grandfather explained that the man in the picture was Samuel, my great-great-grandfather, and that he died in 1939. Now, I don't believe in ghosts, but I could swear it was the same man. Next story. I live in New York City and sometimes take the car to work. This late afternoon, my wife took the subway train to meet me. I stayed late, doing some overtime, so the traffic on the Long Island Express would have been almost empty. I work not too far from where the Midtown joins the LIE, also known as the I-495. It was late, and the wife was nagging to take the LIE, which was an elevated road at that point. She was upset that I instead turned to take the local streets home. We went about 6 or 7 blocks on Borden Avenue, my wife complaining all the way. When it happened, loud thunk, scraping of metal on pavement, and the whole damn left front wheel assembly exits from under the wheel well and drags by the tie rods at about 30 miles an hour. We scraped onto the sidewalk, but no injury at all. The car was even fixed within a week. Now, what the freaky part was, which I didn't tell her till later, was just before I got on the LIE, there was a loud buzzing sound like a distorted voice in my right ear. I thought it was my Bluetooth earphone, but it continued when I took it out and put it in my shirt pocket. What was the distorted voice saying? Go local, go local, go local, go local, nonstop, and getting louder, painfully louder. So I did. At that time of night, with almost no traffic, we would have gotten home in less than 15 minutes. If we had been on the upper road when that happened, the way I drive, we would have been doing 65 plus when the wheel came off. Probably would have been close casket for both of us. I have no explanation, but that buzzing voice in my ear saved us from death or dismemberment. Things like that make you say, my God. Next story. In the late 80s, I was working at an assembly plant in Central Florida. The facility itself had a parking lot on one end, but was surrounded by woods that go for a half mile on the other sides. Around the building was a 10-yard fire gap that was grass, but it was woods after that. On Fridays, my shift ended 4 hours after the last person left the building, and it was just short of about 11:30 p.m. I normally spent the last 5 minutes at the front door so I could turn on the alarm as I walked out. As I peered out the large glass windows, I could see the full moon, but the only street light was far to my right at the edge of the parking lot about 100 yards away. I dropped the window drapes and glanced at my watch. 3 minutes left. The lights were turned off in the front office area, so I was standing in almost pitch dark. One more glance at my watch. 1 minute to go. This time, when I pulled the drapes back, I saw something that gave me a good scare. To my left, at the tree line, there was a woman dressed in all white, walking in the grassy gap. In the moonlight, she appeared to be glowing. I looked at her for 2 to 3 seconds, then cussed a little and dropped the curtains. What the heck was that? I said quietly, who would be dressed like that walking in the woods that late at night? I waited a couple more seconds before pulling the curtains back again, but she was gone. I didn't go outside until I had looked through every available window, then hauled butt to my car. I never saw her again. It's most curious as I don't see how she was able to get across that area and back into the woods in that amount of time. I've sure gotten some good laughs with that story, especially from my kids. Next story. Back in the 1980s, I worked for the Department of Forestry at the University of Kentucky in Lexington for about 3 years. I lived in another town about 30 miles away and commuted into work every day. One spring morning, this would have been around 86 or 87, I was on my way in, stopped at a red light at an intersection near campus. I looked diagonally across the intersection and saw a very odd sight. Standing there, waiting for the light to change so he could pass and cross the street, was a young man. From the neck down, he looked perfectly normal. Plaid shirt, jeans, sneakers, but his head was shaped just like one of those old-fashioned typewriters from the 1930s. The high, narrow kind, with an iron frame. I mean, his head literally looked like the skin of a human head stretched over an old typewriter. The light changed and he crossed the street as I pulled through the intersection. I got a very good look at him from a distance of less than 10 feet in both frontal and profile views, so I know that what I saw wasn't a hallucination or a trick of shadow. To this day, I don't know whether what I experienced was a paranormal event or if he just had a very bizarrely deformed head. But his head was too angular and much too symmetrical to have been the result of a congenital defect or hydrocephaly. Next story. This happened over 10 years ago. Myself and my kids moved into an old house, 100 years or more older, had indoor plumbing as an afterthought, even had a back servant stairway from the kitchen to the second floor. Very old school. The kids shared a room on the front of the house. There was a closet off the room, and that is where their little friend lived. She would come out and play with them for hours and sit on one of the beds for a bedtime story. Did I ever see her? I saw something several times. I would talk to her. Then one day I was straightening up the room and my attention was drawn to the door frame of the closet. There was a heavy latch hook set in the frame and an eye screw set in the door. It had been painted over, so it wasn't as obvious as it would have been normally. Then I heard and felt it. A small child's voice, please don't close the door, cold. I felt the cold, and I got nauseous. I went, got a pair of pliers, and took the hook and eye off the door, and the nausea cleared. She still played with the kids, but it became less and less over the next year or so. Not so with the basement of that same house. Whatever it was, it grew while we were there. The basement was lit by the classic 60-watt bulb hanging from two wires. The washer and dryer were down there. Over time, the shadows grew deeper, and the feeling more oppressive, where it got to the point I did laundry only during daylight hours and still got the scraping sounds and cold drafts on the back of the neck. Worked with it for 8 years because where else can you get a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house on the cheap? Next story. So I was stationed on the USS George Washington from 2003 to 2008. It was 2007, and I was a senior watch in the propulsion plant for the overnight hours. Everyone more senior than me was in bed sleeping. I don't remember exactly what time it was, but one other watchstander and I are sitting around, trying not to fall asleep by telling the same stories for the 100th time, when we hear this weird dodo noise that had an ascending pitch. It's a hard noise to explain, but it was like noise out of the old Twilight Zone show. I've been standing watching this plant for years now, and I have never heard that noise before. The other guy with me is a junior guy, so he's looking to me for answers. Then we hear it again, but it sounded like it came from a different place. We were in a small room, so that confused us even more. This noise keeps happening every 5 to 10 minutes or so. Other watchstanders start pouring in from around the plant to ask me, the guy in charge, what the hell is going on. There are about 6 of us now that are totally freaked out. We knew it couldn't be any sort of attack. The submarine across the way was being refueled and had quite the detailed Marines there to guard the uranium. After about 45 minutes, it stopped, and we didn't hear it again for the rest of our watch. I don't know when or if any of the other guys found out what it was, but it turned out the sub across the way was testing their active sonar that night and forgot to let us know. It sure had a bunch of military guys really freaked out for at least an hour. Next story. Years ago, I was living up in the mountains of Colorado and moved to a new cabin. There was one canyon near it that just had a very bad feeling, and all the locals said it was haunted and bad things would happen to anyone that tried to live there, and most of them would just leave in the night and would not go back. The canyon had about 4 or 5 cabins that were full of abandoned junk. Sometimes, people would go salvage stuff from the cabins. Cars, dresser, tools. It was too spooky for me. I just got the worst feeling every time I went in the canyon. The hair would stand on the back of my neck, and I just felt like I should not be there. One day, a couple came to the property, and they said they had bought a cabin in the next canyon over, and they wanted to say hi. They were friendly and seemed like a nice couple. I didn't want to mention anything spooky because I felt like it would be out of place. So after about 5 minutes or so, they paused and asked me if I knew what happened there. I said, no. What do you mean? They said they found a mattress completely soaked in blood in their shed. I said, I don't know. They seemed very creeped out by the mattress, and their mood changed after they mentioned it. I could tell they were hoping to find out what happened. They said goodbye and to come visit them sometime, and I said, if you ever need anything, just drop by. About a week later, they were gone, left everything except the car they drove out with. Next story. I grew up in rural Nova Scotia, and my parents' house is surrounded by forest and marsh. My dad had built a treehouse for us just outside a view of the house, under a section of trees that opened up into a nice canopy. One summer day, I figure I was around 10 or so, I remember my brother and I both saw something that I recall describing to my dad as an evil monkey sitting in a tree watching us. I recall that my brother took off, and I stared at it for a few seconds before running back to the house, trying to figure out if it was some kind of optical illusion. There was no sound from it, and it stayed perfectly still. As far as I know, there have never been any sightings of anything strange in those woods. My dad hunted there for years and never mentioned anything about it. All I know is that I'm still creeped out to go near where that treehouse was. Next story. Back in the winter of 2001, my youngest son and I were on our way from Boise, Idaho to Medford, Oregon. We had taken a car trailer to his old place in Boise in order to haul his non-running Jeep to his new place in Medford. We hit an area of heavy snow in the Southern Cascades around 2 a.m. It took 45 minutes or so to get down the mountain. We had, of course, been drinking coffee to stay alert. About 25 miles west of the pass, it became obvious that the last few quarts of coffee had to be drained. We stopped at a wide spot in the road near a summer tourist haunt, deserted in winter. There's a gas station and an ice cream joint on the west side of the road, closed this time of year, and no town or settlement within 30 miles. This is tall timber country and unsettled. Across the road is a small parking area for the ice cream joint. It is paved and about 200 feet wide and 80 feet deep. I pulled in and I stepped out with a .45 on my hip, and it occurred to me in a flash that grabbing the 590 Mossy would be good. As we walked to the far end of the area to be well off the road, the hair on my arms and the back of my neck stood on end. The area directly to our front was open with a depth of 50 yards and a width of 100 yards. The night was clear and cold, 8 to 10 inches of snow on the ground, and with the moon almost full, so we could see quite well. While standing and taking a break, my son is about 15 feet to my right. I saw, as if springing from the earth in front of us across the open area, 10 or 12 creatures moving rapidly back and forth in sort of a thatch weave pattern. These things, not human, were close to 7 feet tall, thin, bipedal with long arms, medium length gray fur, and damn fast on their feet. I brought the shotgun up and slid the safety off as soon as my son was drawing his 45. I don't know if I can adequately explain the overwhelming feeling of menace, but here goes. I had been operating on pure instinct since I had stepped from the pickup. The rotten feeling hit me a split second before the things arrived. The feeling, the instinct, was that we were prey and subject to a very bad death, and to be slaughtered and eaten. Not a logical process, gut feeling, and massively overwhelming. As we were moving about in front of us, more appeared and mixed among them, all the while running about fast in front of us. My son and I were backing towards the truck. I would not present my back to them, and some of them peeled off right and left in an encirclement movement. They were rolling in fast from the sides now. I could smell and feel their presence. We got to the truck, loaded on adrenaline and ready to kill, as we both knew we were in grave danger. We piled into the truck, locked doors. I had keys out and ready, as my butt neared the seat. I had the engine lit and transmission in gear and gas pedal mashed in one motion. Adrenaline is great stuff. As we fled, yes, fled, something very close by let out an undulating scream of rage and pain. I believe one or more of the group had gotten really close to us in their pursuit, and I ran over the foot of one of them. Yeah, they were that close. We rolled onto the highway, and I told my son to watch the bed of the pickup, as well as the trailer. He already was indexed to the rear with a shotgun. He hauled ass for at least 20 miles before the feeling of grave danger started to abate. The feeling that nailed both of us, as we discussed soon afterward, was one of being prey, and soon to be slaughtered and eaten. I'm not easily led, and neither believe or disbelieve all the Bigfoot, ghost, and werewolf stuff. In fact, I'm skeptical. My son was speaking with a co-worker about 6 months later, had grown up in Prospect, Oregon, about 30 miles south of Union Creek, where the incident took place. He asked Jake if he had ever heard of any strange going on in the area. Jake, when ashy whitened, pretty much retold the above tale. He said to avoid that place at night. A family friend, a 25-year retired cop, not given to flights of fancy and an excellent observer, had a tale very similar from a year before. I told my wife of this event, of course. She looked at me at the beginning as though I had developed a third eyeball in the center of my forehead. That was from shock. She did believe me, but did not wish to hear any details. She said the tale gave her chills. Me too. As I think about it now, the hair on the back of my neck and my forearms is sticking up. I have not gone back to explore, and would not without a large group of shotgun and flamethrower equipped men with me. My son and I are both sane, sober persons, and not taken to hysteria. We were very, very wide awake as things transpired. We saw and smelled what was there. As a sidebar, neither of us heard footfalls from the creatures. They were silent until I heard one as we were getting the hell out of there. To my knowledge, and I have researched, there is nothing that matches these creatures, unless one considers old legends and folktales of weird creatures. To conclude, I have to fall back on Elmer Keith's famous line, "Hell, I was there." Next story. This happened to me in 2006. It's Saturday and I'm up in the Stanislaus National Forest outside of Sonora, camping and fishing at the Wild Clavy River with a friend of mine. We're out in the middle of the forest, not in a campground, no one else around. It's about 4:30, I'm at the campsite and my friend is fishing downriver, and this guy pulls up in a late model blue Grand Cherokee. He stays in his car and I walk over to say hi. I'm talking to him for a minute and I notice that he's wearing latex gloves while he's just driving around the forest. So I keep talking to him about fishing, etc. And I look again and now he's slipping his hands into golf gloves as he's talking to me. I'm starting to pick up some real heavy vibes from the guy, but I just keep up the small talk as I size up the situation. During the conversation we've had over a couple of minutes, he's asked me two or three times if I'm camping here tonight and how many nights I'm staying. He's also given me way too many details about his life. You know how people get really into specific details when they're lying to you, so it'll sound like they're being honest at times? He's telling me his name is Joe and he lives in Twain Heart and he works at Taco Bell. He didn't say manage, he said worked at Taco Bell. And he's in his late 30s and driving around in a new Grand Cherokee. So, as I'm sizing him up, I realize that I took off my fishing pack, which had my gun in it, and it's in my truck about 30 feet away. This whole time, we're still talking, and he reaches over and unbuckles his seatbelt. I decide then that I'm not going to go to my truck because it's too far away. So I decide that if this guy opens the door, I'm going to let him get one foot and one arm out. Then I'm going to crush him in the door of his own car and then go get my gun. We talked about 30 more seconds, and then he drove off. Now, I've gotten all amped up just thinking about that story. He could have just been a guy who talks too much with a skin condition on his hands, or he could have been a sick opportunist with something else on his mind, which I believe is that we barely dodged a bullet that day. Next story. When I was a kid growing up in Arkansas, from time to time we used to go to the farm. The farm is about 150 acres of land owned by my grandparents in rural Arkansas. It is now just empty land, about half of it open prairie and the other half is fairly heavily wooded. We called it the farm because up until the 1940s, there was a farm there, run by my great-grandfather. Even after the farm disappeared, until the mid-1970s, I'm told, a house stood on the land and some distant relatives lived in it. We used to go out to the farm every now and then just to wander around and collect firewood for the winter. I loved going out there because there was a creek running through the woods with trees that had fallen over making natural bridges. I always thought it was really cool. Once, when I was a kid, I remember feeling like I was being watched and could have sworn on a couple of occasions that off in the distance through the trees, I could see a guy, a dirty-looking hobo type, watching me. I stared off into the brush and woods. It was really overgrown and was sure that I could see someone wearing a stocking cap peering out from behind a tree. I never saw any movement, but just kept catching glimpses of what I thought looked like a person hiding behind a tree. It was too far away, and the trees, vines, and bushes obscured too much to be 100% sure. My parents were collecting firewood, not far away, but I was basically alone. At that time, I was probably 12 or so. I convinced myself that it was my mind playing tricks on me. A couple of years later, my mom and grandpa were reminiscing about the good old days when family members actually lived there on the land, and they got to talking about the only bad thing about the farm was that they always had a problem with hobos who would hop off the freight trains at the small town down the road and end up trying to secretly live in their woods. Now, my next story is about my same grandpa, and he used to love to tell me stories. He traveled for work throughout much of the central United States in his company car. Back in the day, he used to often take my grandmother with him. He said back then they always had traveled with camping gear, and if the weather was nice, they'd find a place to camp rather than stay in a hotel. If the weather was really nice, he said they often wouldn't even bother with a tent, but would just set up their cots and sleep under the stars. You could tell this was part of his past that he loved, and he would tell these stories like it was the best time of his life. At any rate, he often told us about one time when he and Grandma were driving through Missouri. I think it was late summer, early fall. They were a couple of miles outside of some small town and decided that the weather was so beautiful, they'd rather camp than go into town. After looking at their map, they realized that there was some small river not far from their location, so they set out across some back roads to find the river. Once there, they got set up and the camp going. They spent most of the afternoon fishing and waiting around in the river to cool off. That night, after the sun had set, they were sitting around their campfire talking and relaxing. At some point, my grandpa said he noticed a light of some sort down the river on the same side they were on. He didn't think much of it, but later noticed the light had gotten a little closer. At that point, he said he figured it must have been someone fishing along the river who had a flashlight or lantern with them for light. A bit later, he noticed that the light was much closer, and he could tell that it was a lantern swaying back and forth as whoever carried it walked. My grandma didn't like it and said they should leave. Grams thought, it's just a fisherman walking along the river. He figured when the light got close enough, he'd call out to the person and Grandma would see that there was nothing to worry about. The lantern was just a couple of hundred yards away. He shouted out. I don't remember what he said. He yelled, but it was something intended to be friendly, like, hello there, have any luck with the fish? Rather than something like standoffish, like, who goes there? At any rate, the moment he yelled out, whoever it was killed the light. It spooked them both so much that they ran back up the hill to the road, hopped in the car, leaving everything behind, and drove to town down the road and got a room in the motel. The next day, they drove back to the spot, and surprisingly to them, none of their camping and fishing gear was missing. It had, however, been completely demolished. Their camp had been ransacked, and all their stuff had been smashed and broken. Whoever it was had also used a metal object, probably a knife, to scratch the following into the cover of their kerosene camping oven. stay off our river. I always found that story creepy. What if he hadn't noticed the lantern? And this is my next story. A friend of mine used to live out in the western U.S. He and his buddies were avid backpackers who would sometimes go on these hardcore 2 weeks backpacking trips where they'd have someone drive them out to the foot of a mountain in the middle of nowhere and say, "Thanks for the ride. Meet us back at this spot in exactly 2 weeks." Then they'd wander off into the wilderness and rough it for a couple of weeks. They used to go to really remote areas of Utah, Idaho, and Nevada so that they could be truly alone with nature. They had a few scary incidents, mostly involving encountering bears or rattlesnakes and stuff like that. At any rate, on one of their trips after a long day of hiking, they were sitting around their campfire enjoying dinner and shots of whiskey one of them had brought. Off in the distance, they heard a few gunshots. My buddy said they didn't think much of it. They couldn't tell where the shots came from nor how far they were, and frankly, hearing gunshots out in the wilderness isn't nearly as weird or odd as hearing them in a heavily populated area. It could have been a hunter or some other backpacker scaring off a coyote or bear or something. They didn't give it a second thought. Several days later, the trip was over, and as they reached their pickup point, their buddy was waiting to pick them up as scheduled, but walked over, hugged them, saying, "Oh, thank God." Turns out that the gunshots they'd heard involved another group like them. Up in the mountains in the middle of nowhere, there was another group of backpackers, buddy sitting around their campfire relaxing at the end of a day spent with nature when someone, I don't think it was ever solved, walked up to their camp and shot them all. Pretty creepy considering how remote the area was. To make it even creepier, he told me that when they got back to town, based upon what they saw and read in the news and consulting their maps, they figured that this all probably happened within 3 to 5 miles of where they had been camped.